trying so hard as Israel threatens to bomb hospitals to get into Gaza and work in a hospital?
To show concrete solidarity with the Palestinian people. That is our strongest tool now. All over the world, we need to stand up and say, we don't accept this. We need to show solidarity. My solidarity as a medical doctor is to go to Gaza, stand shoulder to shoulder, do the work together with my colleagues, and try to be a decent human person.
Dr. Mads Gilbert, we're going to try to do a part two interview with you and post it at democracynow.org. Dr. Mads Gilbert, Norwegian physician, has been working with the Palestinians for the last 20 years. I am Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, listener-supported community radio.
Remember the days of wandering the pumpkin patches in search of just the right one to bring home? Not too big, not too small, but with a little bit of personality? Well, the days of mucking through the chilled autumn air are over. Now you can grab a KBOO pumpkin crew neck or long sleeve that fits just right and keeps your elbows protected from the elements. Pick up an organic, homegrown, community-sourced piece of merch in gray, green, navy, or maroon and rock this autumn in style. Just check out the sidebar on our website at kboo.fm to harvest your KBOO pumpkin apparel today.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, teachers at Portland Public Schools prepare to go on strike.
Demonstrators in Portland and Minnesota Merkley call for a ceasefire in Gaza.
And in national news, the UAW reaches a tentative agreement with the last Big Three holdout.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, October 30th, 2023. I'm Ron Bronson.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Portland teachers are poised to go on strike in just 2 days if their negotiations with the school district don't improve. On Saturday, Portland teachers, families, and union supporters marched across the Burnside Bridge in support of the Portland Association of Teachers. Bargaining has persisted for 9 months, and the teachers' contract expired in June. The main issues are smaller class sizes, more planning time each week, mental health supports, and increased wages. There are 2 mediation sessions scheduled for Monday and Tuesday ahead of the strike on November 1st. Union leaders have said that based on recent meetings, a strike is likely. Portland Public Schools says they don't have enough money to supply what teachers want. Child care for families is a big question in the face of a teacher strike, but parents have been working on plans. Some have organized child care cooperatives or trading child care with neighbors in order to work full-time during the strike. The public opinion research firm GBAO surveyed Oregonians on their level of support for teachers going on strike. 91% of Portlanders surveyed support a strike to advocate for recruiting and retaining high-quality educators. 87% support a strike to push for reducing class sizes, and 88% support a strike for fair wages for teachers. Those majorities are similar for Oregonians broadly.
Hundreds of demonstrators gathered outside of U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley's office in Portland Saturday, demanding a call for an end to the war in Gaza. More than 8,000 Palestinians are dead, mostly civilians, from Israeli airstrikes in response to an October 7th attack by Hamas. Portland's rally parallels others around the country as outrage grows over the scale of Israel's military strikes. The Saturday march was organized by the Free People of Portland and supported by the Portland Democratic Socialists of America. Demonstrators are calling for Merkley to join the call for a ceasefire in Gaza. So far, Merkley hasn't done this, but he has voiced support for a, quote, humanitarian pause, unquote, to allow aid to enter Gaza. Merkley's office released a statement to Lamet Week about his position. It reads in part, quote, Senator Merkley supports Israel's right to defend itself following Hamas's horrific terrorist attack massacre on Israeli civilians. At the same time, Senator Merkley is calling for Israel to conduct its campaign against Hamas in a targeted manner that maximizes the protection of innocent civilians and is deeply disturbed by the death and injury of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza, including more than 2,000 children, end quote. Protesters have also pressed Senator Ron Wyden and Representative Earl Blumenauer for support a ceasefire, but they have so far declined. Another pro-ceasefire rally outside of Merkley's office is planned for Monday afternoon.
New research finds efficient mail service increases voter turnout, regardless of a state's mail voting laws. It points to the importance of providing sufficient resources to the Postal Service. Eric Tegedoff has more.
When the Postal Service works better, people are more likely to vote, according to new research. The study, published in the Election Law Journal, finds efficient Postal Service increases voter turnout regardless of a state's mail voting laws. Some states have passed more restrictive mail-in voting laws since the false accusations of voter fraud in the 2020 election. Author of the research, Michael Ritter, at Washington State University, says the link is strong between good mail service and voting probability.
Which indicates that the postal system is a critical factor in structuring the ability of mail voting to promote higher voter turnout at the individual level in the country.
Ritter says mail speed can determine whether a ballot makes it to an election office in time to be counted. According to the study, people in states with universal mail-in voting, like Oregon, had the highest probability of voter turnout in 2018 and 2020, at 70%. There was talk of reduced postal service in the run-up to the 2020 election, which may have hurt confidence among some potential voters that their ballot would be delivered in time to be counted. Ritter says that underscores the importance of mail service in elections.
Does the postal system have sufficient resources to be able to reliably administer mail voting? I think that's an important factor.
Ritter says the connection between mail service and voter turnout remains a critical issue.
What I find in my article, that the postal system matters in moderating the impact of mail voting, will continue to be the case in subsequent elections in the future, including 2024.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
One voting rights expert says that he doesn't expect recent guilty pleas from those associated with former President Donald Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election to influence his Make America Great voting base next year. Trump lawyers Kenneth Chesbrough, Jenna Ellis, and Sidney Powell have all taken plea deals in recent weeks to avoid jail time. Ross Brown has more in Texas.
An election law expert says guilty pleas from Trump lawyers in Georgia's election interference case probably won't change the minds of voters who think the 2020 election was stolen. David Becker with the Center for Election Innovation and Research says he has empathy for good Americans who sincerely wanted to see Donald Trump reelected as president in 2020. He believes they're still convinced it was rigged because they've been targets of a long-term disinformation effort to keep them angry and sending money to pay his legal bills.
It's going to be very hard for them to get to the point, just because of a few guilty pleas or prosecutions, that the target of this disinformation, of this grift all along, was them.
Becker also is concerned about a recent State Department cable that says the U.S. intelligence community found evidence that America's adversaries are amplifying narratives that question election integrity. The assessment found that several countries, including Russia, are making a concerted effort to undermine faith in the voting process using social media and other messaging. Becker says the most perilous time following the 2024 election will be from November 5th to January 20th, because losing candidates who insist they won will be more organized and better funded than they were in 2020. He worries that as Trump's rhetoric gets louder and louder, some may try to disrupt next year's voting process.
The fact is that every state has security measures. Every state has verifiable, transparent, secure elections. And it's time for all of us to step up and say that so that we can prevent the possibility that there might be chaos or violence in the post-election period.
Despite his 2020 victory in Texas and no credible evidence of widespread fraud, Trump called for election audit legislation. The Texas Secretary of State nonetheless declared the election smooth and secure. For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown.
The United Auto Workers' unprecedented six-week-long strike may soon be over. This after the union reached a tentative agreement with General Motors. GM was the last of the big three Detroit automakers holding out against the UAW demand of higher wages, cost of living increases, and increases to retirement contributions. Auto workers had sealed a deal with Ford last Wednesday and with Stellantis, formerly Chrysler, on Saturday. The union's failure to settle with GM over the weekend, however, prompted an expansion of the strike. 4,000 workers walked out of the Spring Hill, Tennessee plant Saturday evening following the breakdown of negotiations. Spring Hill is GM's largest factory in North America. UAW members must first ratify the deal before it can go into effect. Already a tentative deal made between the UAW and Mack Trucks failed to get the requisite number of votes, and that forced both parties back to the negotiating table. While terms of the deals with Stellantis and GM have yet to be revealed, the announced deal with Ford includes a 25% general pay raise. Combined with cost of living adjustments, wages will increase more than 30% over the 5-year duration of the contract. The UAW has also convinced automakers to abolish a 2-tiered wage system, which would have pitted older and more recent hires against one another. Victories by the union illustrate that there is plenty to share of the Big Three's combined $31 billion in profits from last year alone.
The U.S. calls for a humanitarian pause in the Israel-Hamas crisis. Advocates in Maine push for tougher gun laws. Representative Dean Phillips announces a run for president, and former Vice President Mike Pence suspends his presidential campaign. With more on these stories, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Every innocent human life is sacred, and every step must be taken to protect human life, whether that be Palestinian or Israeli or anyone else.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan tells ABC the U.S. is prepared to support a humanitarian pause between Israel and Hamas. And Sullivan said more of the hostages held captive in Gaza should be set free. This comes as Israel expands its ground assault. New Speaker for the House Mike Johnson tells Fox a standalone Israeli aid bill without help for Ukraine will reach the chamber's floor later this week.
We cannot allow the brutality and the just unspeakable evil that is happening against Israel right now to continue. We're going to stand with our friends.
Robert Card, the man accused of killing 18 people at a Maine bowling alley, was found dead Saturday. Governor Janet Mills said the state is both relieved and grieving.
And I ask that all Maine people continue to keep those families and all of the people impacted by this tragedy in their thoughts and prayers.
Gun safety advocates there are calling for tougher background checks and a complete ban on assault weapons. Anna Keller with the Maine League of Women Voters calls those common sense, even if politically difficult.
It's going to take that kind of courage from our political leaders, but I think it's what their constituents are really looking for from them in a moment like this, is to do that soul searching and take a stand when they need to.
And the mass shootings haven't stopped. One in Tampa, Florida brought 2 deaths and 18 hospitalizations. Separately, at least 15 people were injured by a gunman in Chicago. Long Island Congressman Anthony Desposito is pushing for the expulsion of fellow New York Republican George Santos. Santos now faces 23 criminal charges, including wire fraud, conspiracy, and making false statements. Desposito says he has to go.
As a result of these actions, George Santos is not fit to serve his constituents as a United States representative.
Representative Dean Phillips is announcing a long-shot primary challenge to President Joe Biden. The Minnesota Democrat says he worries Biden's age and unpopularity is weakening the party's leader and the nation's commander-in-chief.
I am running for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States because, my friends, it is time for a change.
Meanwhile, former Vice President Mike Pence is suspending his campaign. Speaking to the Republican Jewish Coalition Conference, Pence says this is not his time and has no regrets.
I will never leave the fight for conservative values, and I will never stop fighting to elect principled Republican leaders to every office in the land.
Pence has yet to endorse anyone. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. Hi,
Hawaii has been dubbed the extinction capital of the world. That's because 8 bird species declared lost earlier this month. Wildlife advocates say it's a wake-up call that imperiled species need more protection from the ravages of climate change. But a long-awaited plan to suppress mosquitoes that spread avian malaria is now embroiled in a court challenge. Ross Brown has the details.
Hawaii is known for its beautiful birds, and wildlife advocates want to see more done to protect them from the effects of climate change. One of the major threats is avian malaria, spread by a species of invasive mosquitoes, with death rates exceeding 90%. The National Park Service is ramping up a plan to suppress the mosquitoes by making them unable to reproduce. Joni Peters with the Conservation Council of Hawaii says the work can't begin soon enough, noting that 6 birds declared extinct earlier this month were Hawaiian honeycreepers.
All of these birds are endemic to Hawaii, so they occur nowhere else in the world. So once these species are extinct, they are gone from the face of this earth and we cannot replace them.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service removed 21 species from the endangered species list earlier this month after concluding they were already extinct. The plan to address invasive mosquitoes, which Peters considers urgent, is on hold after the group Hawaii Unites filed for a temporary injunction, claiming the project needs more study to prove it won't harm birds, the environment, or human health. Linda Elliott directs the state's Wildlife Center and says Hawaii is home to 44% of the country's endangered and threatened species. With so many on the list, the state has been dubbed the extinction capital of the world.
8 out of 21 now declared extinct, and then we know that there's at least 5 others that could go extinct in our lifetime. That's not something I ever expected to experience, but we're focused on making sure that we're part of the solution.
A recent festival put a focus on native birds and their cultural significance, including the ancient use of bird feathers to create cloaks and capes. Peter says in 2010, a small, honey-eating songbird was declared extinct after not being seen in more than 35 years. She says the male bird was last recorded calling for a mate who had perished.
What we know of on o'o is through what we hear in songs, read in books, or go to the museum and see the handiwork of people that used to do feather work. And that's part of the culture that we will never get back.
In addition to birds, Hawaii's endangered species include the monk seal and the green sea turtle. For Hawaii News Service, I'm Roz Brown.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth with the directors of the QDOC Portland Queer Documentary Film Festival on this weekend at the Hollywood Theater. At 6, it's Labor Radio. Then at 6:30, it's Present Pipeline. Tonight's weather will be clear with a low of 38 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a daytime high of 59. Today in history, in 1983, the first democratically elections held in Argentina after 7 years of military rule. The quote of the day is from American actor Henry Winkler. Born on this day in 1945, he's known as playing Fonzie, the Fonz, on the show Happy Days, among other roles. He said, quote, "You cannot represent cool. You've got to be cool. You've got to be authentic. I think, after all these years, that's how I define cool, is being authentic. That is powerful."
When an ad for cost-free living on Alaska's Kodiak Island went viral this summer, 2 families jumped at the opportunity. The effort was meant to help reopen the school in the native village of Karluk. But now, just a few months later, their school is closing again. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The native village of Karluk on Kodiak Island in Alaska went viral this summer for an ad offering cost-free living in an effort to reopen its school. But just a month after classes started, the school is closing again. KMXT's Brian Venwa reports.
The decision to close the school was unanimous at an emergency school board meeting. Cindy Mika is the Kodiak Island Borough School District Superintendent.
It's a sad day when you have to close a school. And it's not anything that I ever wanted to do in my tenure. And it's nothing that I want to ever repeat again. So it weighs heavy on your heart when you have to close a school.
Karluk, on the southwest end of Kodiak Island in Alaska, had just a few dozen year-round residents, with only two of them being school-age kids. The village advertised free living expenses for two families to move there over the summer because the state requires 10 students to be enrolled in order to receive funding. The ad worked. Two families with eight kids between them moved to Karluk in September, and the district's Board of Education voted to reopen the facility. Then both of the new families had left Karluk. A representative for the tribal council said in an email it was a blow to the community. She said, quote, "It's so disappointing. We thought we picked the right families." October is when the Alaska Department of Education does a headcount of students for funding, but since the families left before the count was finished, Mika says they could be out $80,000 in their already tight budget.
We didn't make it through the count. That's predominantly the reason why, that is really solely the only reason why we are closing.
The district is currently working with the state to try to get prorated funding for serving the 10 students for the weeks they stayed in the village, but otherwise the money will have to come out of the district's fund balance or savings. While it didn't work out, Mika says she still stands by her recommendation and the Board of Education's decision to reopen the school.
We did the right thing. It was a risk. It didn't pay off, but, you know, we did our best while we had the school open.
The building will officially close on November 2nd, exactly 1 month after it opened. The kids in Karluk are currently working with the school district to transition back to homeschooling. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
Artist Buffy St. Marie is speaking out about a media report that questions her Indigenous identity. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, a Canadian Broadcasting Corporation documentary suggests St. Marie's claim to Indigenous ancestry is contradicted by family members and a birth certificate.
The CBC says it found her birth certificate. It says she was born in 1941 in Stoneham, Massachusetts. Her parents were Albert and Winifred St. Marie. The documents also list the baby as white and includes a signature by an attending physician. From her early days, St. Marie has claimed to be a Cree woman. That's now being contradicted by members of her own family and an investigation suggesting she has European roots. St. Marie says the questions about her origins are hurtful.
These questions hurt me. They still do. But they also hurt others. They're questions I've struggled with my whole life.
In the 1971 Buffy St. Marie songbook, which she wrote and illustrated, she said, "When I go home to the Cree Reserve in Canada where I was born, I usually spend a few hours of every day teaching the Cree language." Also, in a 1986 interview with the Los Angeles Times magazine, she said she had been born on the Paiapot Reserve in Saskatchewan. In her 2018 biography, there's no official record of her birth.
I don't know where I'm from, who my birth parents are, or how I ended up a misfit in a typical white Christian New England town.
The 82-year-old St. Marie says she realized decades ago that she would never have the answers. Still, some Indigenous academics say it's unacceptable for non-Indigenous people to speak for Indigenous people and take honors they shouldn't. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A new report finds mothers and children across the United States are struggling. In these health findings, Oregon ranks 20th among the states. Eric Tegadoff reports.
A new report finds a troubling rise in health challenges for mothers and children across the country. The United Health Foundation has released its America's Health Rankings Health of Women and Children report. It found maternal mortality increased 29% between 2014 and 2021. In the report, Oregon ranks 20th. Dr. Aaron Coie is a professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the Oregon Health and Science University. He believes the 2017 Reproductive Health Equity Act Oregon enacted has helped Oregon in some metrics measured in the report.
Being able to make sure that people have really good access to contraceptive care, reproductive health care, means that you tend to improve reproductive health care outcomes, principal among them, low birth weight and preterm birth.
However, Coie notes that substance use disorder and homelessness are major issues impacting women and children in Oregon. Dr. Lisa Saul is the National Medical Director of Maternal Child Health for United Healthcare. She says substance abuse is an issue across the country.
Maternal mortality is not just confined to the hospital stay and to birth, but really we're seeing an impact in terms of deaths in the postpartum period, deaths related to behavioral health issues like suicide and drug use.
The report did find some positives, including a 10% drop in teen births between 2020 and 2021, and a 45% drop in electronic vapor product use among high school students between 2019 and 2021. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Public interest in mycology has ignited interest in fungi conservation, which in turn can preserve species that help habitats handle the effects of climate change. Edwin J. Vieira has those details.
Public interest in mycology, the study of fungi from mold to mushrooms, is aiding conservation work for species of fungi. The Royal Botanic Gardens at Kew find only 0.4% of global fungi species have been assessed for conservation. Experts feel this interest stems from new empathy for fungal species rather than passing them off as weird or gross. Patricia Kashian with the New York State Museum describes what's needed for proper fungi conservation efforts to go forward.
So I think it's important just to have more and more surveys of fungi at the state level or at even more local levels that occur year after year so that we can sort of track these changes over time.
The hope is people will see fungi's role in keeping habitats safe from climate change. A 2023 study finds underground networks of mycorrhizal fungi on plant and tree roots can capture large amounts of carbon to store in soil. This helps soil retain carbon, which the United Nations says is important, since 90% of Earth's topsoil will be degraded by 2050 due to intensive farming practices. But the biggest challenge to increasing fungi conservation is funding. California has provided funding for a statewide mycological conservation survey. And Gabriella D'Elia with the Fungal Diversity Survey says another challenge is the array of unknowns about fungi and how they're cataloged.
You know, there's all kinds of repositories for different biodiversity checklists and things like that in the states. And the fact is that fungi are just more often neglected and not really known how to work with.
She's hoping to see efforts like the one in California come to New York. D'Elia feels New York's plan to conserve 30% of state lands by 2030 provides an opportunity for inclusion of fungi surveys. This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection.
For most people, the holidays are about embracing long-standing traditions with their loved ones, as well as creating new ones. Animal rights activists say that when it comes to meal planning, considering a meatless holiday feast is a good opportunity to shake things up. Mike Mullen speaks with the president of the Alliance for Animals to learn more.
November is almost here, and some Wisconsin households might be planning their menu for upcoming holiday meals. Those who support vegan diets say it's not a fringe option to consider. For holidays like Thanksgiving, turkey is still the staple. Mary Telfer with the Wisconsin-based organization Alliance for Animals says they urge everyone to avoid eating meat this holiday season due to animal treatment concerns, human health, and environmental impacts from food production. For people on the fence about making the switch, she says you can lean into vegan options.
And they think, how can I do this and still please my family? How can I do this and still keep up our traditions? I mean, yeah, try some different things.
She says you can sample vegan food before the holidays, noting there are now countless websites and cookbooks with recipes. And grocery chains like Aldi and Trader Joe's sell plant-based holiday roasts. And Telfer says if you feel like you need to serve meat to your guests, you can offset the impact by using sides like non-dairy whipped cream. And staples like mashed potatoes and cranberries can still complement the meal. And if you're worried about missing out on protein, Telfer recommends you load up on protein-rich vegetables such as peas. As for considering a vegan holiday meal, she feels it shouldn't be as controversial as some might think.
We don't think it's strange when we welcome progress. When it comes in the form of technology or the newest phone or laptop, and yet we have a harder time embracing progress in how we think about our non-human animal friends.
Beyond the treatment of animals, she says industrialized food production creates land use issues for future generations, threatens wildlife habitat, while adding to pollution woes that harm human health. This is Mike Mullen for Wisconsin News Connection.
So are you feeling the fall chill in an older home? The U.S. Department of Energy wants you to know that your older domicile can be weatherized, and they have a new webpage with DIY projects to help you save money this winter and reduce your home's carbon footprint. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on that story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As winter approaches, people with older homes may worry about the high cost of heating drafty rooms in the coming months. But homeowners can reduce heating expenses and make their space more comfortable with just a few simple weatherization projects. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, caulking air leaks around windows can reduce energy costs by 10 to 20%. weather stripping around windows and doors, and adding insulation to the attic, basement, and crawl spaces of a home can also prevent warm air from escaping. By reducing drafts, weatherizing can help keep it nice and toasty inside. And it can help reduce climate warming pollution. If the home is heated with fuel oil or natural gas, saving energy decreases a homeowner's use of fossil fuels. The DOE has created a webpage that can help do-it-yourselfers figure out which energy-saving projects will offer the biggest bang for their buck. It includes step-by-step directions, the skill level required, approximate prices, and the amount of energy that can be saved by completing each project. So homeowners can decide which projects to tackle in order to help keep their home warm when the temperatures turn cold. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You've been listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, October 30th, 2023. It's a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our producer and director for tonight's newscast is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Reed Johnson, Eric Tegadoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, Mike Moen, Ross Brown, and Alex Gonzalez. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO on KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath at 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM. I'm Ron Bronson.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members, awesome people like you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, please go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth. We'll be speaking with the directors of the QDoc Film Fest, showing films this weekend at the Hollywood